Well, today we're going to talk with a man who has made a life profession of striking a blow against the empire, Francis Boyle. He's one of America's recognized experts on international law. He was responsible for drafting the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, the American implementation of the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention. He teaches international law at the University of Illinois at Champaign and holds a Doctor of Law magna cum laude, as well as a PhD in political science from Harvard. He has authored 8 books, the most recent being Destroying World Order and Biowarfare and Terrorism, which will be part of what we will be talking about with him today. He has also been in the forefront of bringing impeachment charges or trying to against President Bush. Welcome to Takes on the World, Francis Boyle. Welcome again.
Well, Jeff, thanks for having me on, and my best to your listening audience.
Well, let's start with looking at what this administration has been doing to the American people, apart from its crimes against the people of Iraq and Afghanistan. Even every 2 weeks, it seems, there's a further revelation about how the administration is shredding our constitutional rights, and yet the Democrats, from Nancy Pelosi, the House Whip, to John Conyers, the ranking House Judiciary Committee member, have said that they have no plans to bring impeachment charges against Bush, even if the Democrats take over the House in November. What's going on here?
Well, Jeff, I think it became very clear that when the revelations for the NSA wiretapping on the people of America came out, that were clearly not only unconstitutional, but criminal felonies under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that 14 members of Congress in both the House and the Senate had been briefed and knew about this all along and said nothing at all about it to the American people, despite the fact they could have easily done so without any consequences under the speech and debate clause of the Constitution. It became very clear that the leaders of the Democratic Party have been complicit in everything Bush has done since September 11th. On every assault that this administration has made upon the civil rights and civil liberties of the American people, they've been complicit. And the only people in the Democratic Party who have spoken out, voted, our Senator Feingold in Wisconsin, to his credit, and Barbara Lee out there who voted against the Patriot Act, but that's it. It's very clear the DNC and the Democratic leadership have been complicit. They don't care. They're not going to act. They voted for most of these totalitarian measures that we've seen come through Congress, starting with the Patriot Act in the first place, and then the renewal of the Patriot Act. So it just seems to me that we're going to need to run new members for Congress of whatever party who are going to stand up for the United States Constitution, who oppose the establishment of a police state, who are against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that are clearly illegal and criminal, and want to oppose the forthcoming war against Iran.
Now, one of the things that's troubled me is that when someone like Pelosi does make a statement acknowledging that she had been briefed on the NSA wiretap, in San Francisco Bay Area, considered to be one of the most progressive areas in the United States, there seems to be no outrage. No one's holding her feet to the fire. And obviously, if there is no outrage, these politicians don't feel any obligation to change their ways.
That's correct. The excuse they have given is that, well, this information was classified and we couldn't say anything about it. That's just ridiculous. I was counsel to Congressman Henry B. Gonzalez in his impeachment campaign against Bush Sr. And what Congressman Gonzalez did is that when he got classified information of the defalcations by Bush Sr., he appeared on the floor of the House and read it right there into the into the congressional record and call for the news media to come and cover it. And this was his right under the speech and debate clause that says quite clearly that any member of Congress can get up on the floor of the House or the Senate and say whatever he or she wants to say and is fully unaccountable as a matter of law. You can't leave then and hold a press conference outside, but you can on the say what you want on the floor of the House or the Senate, and then he just alerted the news media to come and hear what he had to say. So they're all aware of this. They're aware of this precedent. They're aware that they could have done this if they did not, if they wanted to. And instead, they were complicit in violations of the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution and complicit in violations of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that are felonies. And finally, at least Congress is now trying to stand up a little bit, I guess, to protect themselves. When Attorney General Gonzalez had the FBI raid the office of this African-American congressman, again in violation of the speech and debate clause, and finally they're saying something because the FBI is now going after them as opposed to the American people. But it doesn't look good at all. Again, I think we have a... I'm a political independent, so I'm trying to call him as I see him. But, you know, except for Senator Feingold and Barbara Lee, who's out there, I think the whole Democratic leadership has been complicit in everything that Bush Jr. has been doing since September 11th. And I just think we need new members of Congress.
Well, it's interesting, even Barbara Lee, I'm not sure, it was a House vote, but I was very disturbed to see that recently they had something called the Iranian Freedom Act, which was another one of these acts drafted by AIPAC, which brings back memories of the Iraq legislation approved by the House before kind of putting Iraq on warning that it was going to be attacked, and the Iran Freedom Act was approved by virtually, well, every member of the Black Caucus except for Cynthia McKinney, including Barbara Lee, voted for it. It's very distressing that that there's no pressure, insufficient pressure, at least from the progressive movement, even despite the polls, that allows the Congress people to believe they can vote and represent the American people properly.
Well, again, this goes back to funding by AIPAC to the congressional party. And I guess I should have also, in fairness, mentioned Congresswoman McKinney, who has spoken out to the best she can. But sure, it raises the general question to what extent is the Democratic Party really a front organization for AIPAC. You have Senator Obama here in the state of Illinois that everyone's saying is such a liberal and progressive, but, you know, he's called for a military attack on Iran. And you have to understand that. Who's paying for Obama? Who's paying his bills? And it's AIPAC sources who are behind him. So, of course, that does have to factor into the equation and ask, you know, to what extent is really the Democratic Party functioning as nothing more than a front organization for AIPAC. That's right.
Which is what I've been saying for a long time. I just went through a new book of yours, which it was quite frightening, Biowarfare and Terrorism, and in which you bring back something I had forgotten about and most people have forgotten about, the anthrax attack, the anthrax scare and attack that scared the American public shortly after 9/11. And you point out in the book, this effectively shut down Congress at a critical time. Not only has there been no one indicted for mailing the anthrax, the story seems to disappear from our national memory. Congress seems to, which was threatened, doesn't talk about it. And what you've written about it portrays a frightening and dangerous scenario.
what I point out is very simple, that the in the book I wrote, that the anthrax attack, in my opinion, certainly was designed to ram through the USA Patriot Act through Congress, and the source of the anthrax attack definitely goes back to illegal criminal, a U.S. Biowarfare program. So it does seem to me that these efforts, these actions were coordinated, yes.
But, you know, it's interesting, while there have been a number of private investigators who have raised serious questions about who is responsible for the events of 9/11, whether there's a kind of a made it happen or let it happen, there's debates among the investigators who is responsible, but most seem to agree that the United States was involved in some way, and yet I'm not aware that others have made the link between 9/11 and the anthrax attacks that you've made, and you describe it as like a 1-2 punch. And you also talk about the two senators who were targeted, Daschle and Leahy, as being the ones who were leading the questions against the Patriot Act.
That's correct. And actually, if you look at the recent renewal and expansion of the U.S. Patriot Act by Congress last February 2006, again, it was being held up. And then all of a sudden, sensors in a U.S. Senate office building detected an alleged nerve agent, and you saw that on television, and then soon enough the senators reversed direction and capitulated to the Bush administration proposed renewal and expansion of the USA Patriot Act. So it's now happened twice in a row. I don't think any of that is a coincidence. And I think, as I argued in the book, that the reason the FBI hasn't investigated the anthrax attacks, there's been no indictments, is that they know full well it will lead back to a U.S. Government lab and U.S. Government agents that were behind that anthrax attack, and very well could lead to the same people ultimately responsible for September 11th. Obviously, I think, you know, I'm not expressing an opinion here on September 11th, except to say that clearly the Bush president himself, Condoleezza Rice, Attorney General Ashcroft, they knew that a major terrorist attack was coming, and they let it happen.
Well, it's the possibility or likelihood that the U.S. government was involved or behind the attacks in 9/11. Or the anthrax attack, have been dismissed by, I would say, most of the main spokespersons of what we loosely call the left in the United States, as much as it has by the mainstream. Indeed, Noam Chomsky has said there's, quote, no basis for questioning the administration scenario. How do you account for that, and what effect this has had on exposing the truth?
I really don't know. All I can do is I wrote my book, and there is quite extensive footnoting and documentation in there, and, you know, you can read it for yourself, and, you know, you can agree with me or someone else if you want to. What can I say? But, you know, again, clearly the United States government intelligence agencies knew that attack on September 11th was coming. They let it happen. That USA Patriot Act was already drafted before September 11th. We know that for a fact. Professor Yu, the war criminal out there at the Berkeley Faculty Law School, has admitted this. It was sitting on Ashcroft's desk, ready to go. The first draft of the USA Patriot Act, drafted by Professor Yu, would have suspended the writ of habeas corpus. That is all that really differentiates us from a police state. Fortunately, some congressional staffer saw that and struck it, although the writ of habeas corpus is effectively suspended for aliens for 7 days. And then even when they couldn't get the USA Patriot Act through because of the opposition of Senators Daschle and Leahy, then you saw the anthrax attacks. And again, it's been confirmed that those agents involved traced back to U.S. biowarfare program. So when you add it all up, I see coordination here.
You know, I and others have made the case that the war in Iraq was orchestrated by the leading neocons to benefit Israel, but you've gone further in demonstrating their influence in totally rewriting U.S. foreign policy in the direction of launching preventive wars and using biological weapons in doing so. Perhaps you could expand on that.
Sure. If you look at the PNAC document, the neocons, and I have it right there in my book, you can read it. I have the citations. They clearly advocate the use and development of biological weapons. And then the neocons moved into the Pentagon, Paul Wolfowitz and Feith and the rest of them. And I went through their latest program, the CBDP, Chemical Biological So-Called Defense Program, where they basically admitted, and indeed one of their people that I did contact in the Pentagon on this admitted that they have incorporated into the ongoing Pentagon plans for biological and chemical warfare, preventive warfare by means of biological and chemical weapons. Again, the documentation with the footnotes is in my book. You can, you know, read it for yourself and draw your own conclusions. We have to understand the neocons today pretty much, for the most part, worked for Reagan. They were at a lower level at that time. They all got promoted. And back in the Reagan administration, as I documented in my book, the same group of neocons were promoting biological weapons, chemical weapons, Star Wars, the abrogation of the ABM Treaty. So it was an across-the-board development of every scientific lead the United States government had in any weapons potential area. And, you know, they tried under Reagan and pretty much were beaten back. But now, after September 11th, with Bush Jr., they've used September 11th as an excuse. They've abrogated the ABM Treaty. They torpedoed the inspection protocol for the Biological Weapons Convention. And as I point out in this book and my other books, Destroying World Order and Criminality of Nuclear Deterrence, they're proceeding apace to develop every type of weapon system they possibly can, nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, biological weapons, space weapons, you name it, they're doing it.
My guest is Francis Boyle. The book we're talking about right now is Biowarfare and Terrorism, and it was published by Clarity Press in Atlanta, Georgia. How do people get this book? It's a small, thin book packed with information.
Right. You can order it at Amazon.com for about $13. We decided to keep the price low so that people can afford it and read it and hopefully act on it. I have a whole list of things that you can do at the end of the book if you're interested in trying to weigh in here. I also think you now have out there at the University of California, they're trying to get involved in these biowarfare facilities, bio-level 3, bio-level 4, that are under consideration. There's been a lawsuit filed to try to stop them. And I have information in here on how dangerous these types of facilities really are. They're completely unnecessary. All they're going to do is further proliferate biowarfare technology into the hands of completely unvetted, unqualified people that someone could either use it deliberately or there'll be an accident and it will get released into the environment one way or the other.
I want to get back there in just a second. I want to say that I would suggest to listeners to go to your local bookstores. We have independent bookstores in the county and ask them to order it for you from Clarity Press Incorporated, ClarityPress.com, to get them so people can see this book on the shelves of the bookstores as they walk in, because we want to expand this kind of information, and the independent bookstores are a good way of doing that, particularly in this county. So I want to encourage that. One of the things what's important in your book is you go through and detail all the various steps that have the different programs that have led up to the present situation. For example, the national security strategy of the U.S. spelled out in 2002, with Paul Wolfowitz being the major architect of that, put out the doctrine of preventive war. These documents complement one another, building up a huge reservoir of documentation of what the U.S. plans to do.
Right, and Wolfowitz was part of the PNAC project for New American Century, the neocon manifesto, which explicitly endorsed the research and development and use of biological weapons. So as I argue in the book, and again, there's nothing new about that. The same people tried to do the exact same thing in the Reagan administration, which led me to my effort to enact implementing legislation for the Biological Weapons Convention that was signed into law by President Bush Sr. in 1989, making this a felony punishable by life in prison. I struck any death penalty in there. I don't support it. So it's the same people trying to do the exact same thing all over again, and right now they're getting away with it.
You mentioned in the book that a smoking gun was the Pentagon's Chemical and Biological Defense Program of May 2004, which gives the Pentagon the capability to launch an offensive biological and chemical warfare attack. Is there something in the United Nations international law in which some other country could bring the U.S. to charge on that?
I did point that out. First of all, it is correct. If you read the Pentagon CBDP 2004, they admit that it was revised to take into account and implement the plans for preventive warfare that had been articulated by Wolfowitz in November and also, in September, and then later in December of 2002. The December 2002 called for the use of chemical, nuclear, and biological weapons offensively if they thought to be necessary. So the Pentagon then revised its plans accordingly, and they admitted this in their document, which I read through. It's a very long document. You have to go through it all. And then I asked for a confirmation from the person who drafted this document for the Pentagon if it had been amended to take into account the plans for preventive warfare going back to Wolfowitz and the PNAC people. And she said yes. And I have the email correspondence right in there in the book, which you can read. And again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can read the book, consult my footnotes, and make up your own mind.
And I encourage people to do that. You made a reference to the University of California, but you also, a portion in your book, you talk about University of Illinois as well. The behavior or misbehavior of American universities is something you expose, and how the universities have a long history of allowing their institutions, their laboratories, to be co-opted and corrupted by the Pentagon and the CIA. Perhaps you could elaborate on that.
Sure. The best source on this, actually, is by Seymour Hersh, who wrote a book back in 1969, I believe, on offensive U.S. biowarfare programs, back in the days when it was not illegal and criminal. And in this book, Hersh had all of the universities in America that were actually engaged in developing offensive biological warfare programs. And he listed them all by name, including this university here where I teach, University of California, Harvard, University of Chicago. I went to both those schools, et cetera. Some of the most distinguished universities in America. Then what happened is back in the 1980s under Reagan and the neocons, when they decided to get involved in the research and development of biological weapons again, despite the Biological Weapons Convention, the Pentagon went all over the country and bought off top-flight so-called life science researchers at some of the best universities in the country, once again, going back, tapping the same sources to develop biological weapons. And again, I have the that document here, and it goes on at great length with all the researchers, all the universities. We had them here at the University of Illinois. I blew the whistle on these people. And it turns out, and again, out there at the University of California, you need to check into this information, file a Freedom of Information Act request. I take it California has a Freedom of Information Act. Get that information. Find out which researchers, which professors, which of the institutes out there are involved in biowarfare research, and what are the contracts they had. And I did that here at the University of Illinois, and sure enough, they had three or four different biowarfare research contracts, clearly violated the Biological Weapons Convention. Indeed, the worst part in the contracts, when I blew the whistle, they denied it, but I got the contracts themselves by means of a Freedom of Information Act request under the Illinois Freedom of Information Act. And the worst part of these contracts was when the so-called life science researchers said, we have decided to use these experimental agents for mycotoxins and blue-green algae toxins on pigs because they have a circulatory and a respiratory system most akin to human beings. So, you know, it was very clear that these researchers were developing biowarfare agents to be used against human beings. And they were shameless. They went right ahead and did it anyway. And these so-called institutional review boards that all universities are required to have by federal law to vet and approve these types of contracts signed off on these this type of reprehensible research, Dr. Mengele-type research, which has led me to call them all death scientists, not life scientists, and prove to me that the so-called institutional review boards with in-house vetting are worthless. Why? Because there's too much money at stake for these universities. And I'm sure the University of California is the same way. After we blew the whistle, we had a public debate on the propriety of these contracts, as well as contracts with the CIA by university professors. And the university sent an administrator over where he admitted that the university gets 51% of all these contracts for biowarfare and CIA research. It gets 51 cents out of every dollar brought in, which they charge off as overhead. So it's clear that even prestigious universities like the University of Illinois, I'm sure Berkeley, Harvard, Chicago, Johns Hopkins, and others, MIT, there's no interest at all in rejecting research that is unethical, illegal, criminal, or dangerous, because they have these hand-picked, cherry-picked institutional review boards who are not going to reject this research because there's too much money at stake.
It's interesting, there has been an exposure in the San Francisco Chronicle of the outrageous and illegal salaries that the administrators of the University of California system have been voting for each other, that far and beyond anything that they were supposed to get, and perhaps that's one of the sources of their money. That the story that you have just told, though, has not been exposed. It's interesting, in your book you mentioned how during the Reagan administration there were shipments of biological agents to Saddam's Iraq, which violated the Biological Warfare Convention, and that was stopped by Bush Sr.
Shipments, by the way, were by the Center for Disease Control, which you know, yes. was truly Orwellian. That was done again by Reagan and his neocons, and also by the American type culture collection, which is a private scientific research institute. They had a Nobel Prize winner in biology there on their board, and yet they knowingly shipped weapons-specific biological agents to Saddam Hussein in Iraq at the behest of the Reagan administration and its neocons, including Wolfowitz and Cheney, Feith, and the rest of them, for use by Iraq against Iran, and then, of course, blowback on U.S. armed forces when they showed up there in Iraq, and we have the Gulf War syndrome that the Pentagon still denies. And I discuss some of that in my book, and there's another book, Clarity Press, called Homefront, the Government's War on Soldiers, that spends a lot of time, a lot more time than I do, on the Gulf War syndrome.
Well, you also mentioned in connection with the chemical weapons or chemical compounds shipped to Saddam that the U.S. troops were given anthrax and vaccine and botulinum toxin given to the troops before the FDA approved that, and that violated international law. They were experimenting on U.S. soldiers.
That's correct. These were experimental vaccines in violation of the Nuremberg Code on medical experimentation that resulted in the so-called doctor's prosecution at Nuremberg dealing with people like Dr. Mengele and the others. That's exactly correct. We first raised this issue in the court-martial proceedings of Captain Dr. Yolanda Hewitt Vaughn in 1991, who in Gulf War I, she refused to give these experimental medical vaccines, facing up to 5 years. We got her out of Leavenworth after 8 months.
Now, you've had experience. You're not only a professor of law, but you're obviously a social activist, and you've written about the neocons. But you've had experience with actually the birth of that movement, University of Chicago. Maybe
that's
you could
correct.
Tell us about
I went to enter the University of Chicago in 1968, and Leo Strauss, the founder of the neocon movement, had just retired. But I was trained by his leading protege, literary executor, co-author, Joseph Cropsey. It's Strauss Cropsey, History of Modern Political Philosophy. So, yes, I was at the University of Chicago when all the neocons were there. It's a heavily neocon institution dominated and controlled by the neocons. Wolfowitz was there when I was there. All the neocons were there when I was there. I was trained to be one of these people. I was running out of time. I do discuss the neocons in my book, Destroying World Order, but the critical point is this. Strauss's mentor in Germany was Carl Schmitt. And Carl Schmitt went on to become the leading Nazi law professor of his era, a notorious Nazi law professor who justified every atrocity by the Nazis and the Nazi party in their run-up to power in legal terms as a law professor. And he was Leo Strauss's mentor and sponsor in Germany. So basically, the so-called neocons are really neo-Nazis, and they are articulating a neo-Nazi philosophy. To give you one example, a leading neocon, Fukuyama, did a review of Max Weber's Protestant Ethic and the Spirit of Capitalism on its 100th anniversary for the Sunday New York Times Book Review, and he had the entire back page. And during the course of this review, he cited Schmitt as an authority, with no mention at all that Schmitt was a Nazi. And this got right through the Sunday New York Times Book Review editor. No one pointed out that, how can you, Fukuyama, be citing as authority Schmitt, this notorious Nazi law professor here in the Sunday New York Times Book Review. All the neocons have read Schmitt. They adhere to Schmitt. And what we're dealing with here are neo-Nazis. They're not just neocons. They are neo-Nazis. And they've been trained to think that way. I was trained to think that way, too. And, again, I went to school with all these people. I was at the top of my undergraduate class at the University of Chicago. So
I'm glad you got away.
It was sort of like Greg Palast. He went in there to figure out what these people were doing and come out and blow the whistle on them. I went in there to be trained like one of these people and come out and turn it against them. But, again, you don't have to take my word for it. There are two books by Professor Shadia Drury, D-R-U-R-Y, who teaches political philosophy in Canada. She's not part of the American debate here, called The Political Theory of Leo Strauss, and the second, Leo Strauss and the American Right. I would encourage you to read both those books to understand about these neocons. And, again, Drury points out that they all really go back to Schmitt, who was a Nazi professor of law. And all I can say is, having been trained on the outside, on the inside, Drury's completely from the outside approaching this as a scholarly philosophical matter. I agree with everything she has to say about Strauss and the neocons and the University of Chicago. So Drury from the outside, me from the inside, we both can't be wrong. I don't think so. And I'm a product of that institution, and I can just assure you, you know, it is, if you want to have a little essay on it on counterpunch.org, it's just a reprehensible institution. You would not want to send any of your children to the University of Chicago for any reason. They'd simply be turned into, again, one of these neocons. I mean, ask yourself, do you really want your child to grow up to be a Wolfowitz or an Ashcroft or a Chalabi or any of these other people? And I think the answer is clearly no.
Well, that's a very interesting and enlightened piece of information that I was not aware of. One of the things that, based on what you just said, I was going to ask you to comment. We constantly read in the newspapers that these neocons really want, as well as the administration, to bring democracy to, let's say, the Middle East. And when I read this in the paper, newspaper journalists actually write this stuff, and they speak this on the talking heads, say this. What is your reaction to that?
You know, I debated Fuad Ajami, the token Arab neocon in Dubai, on this at a big international conference that Clinton was the keynote speaker, and then Albright spoke, and then they brought in Ajami and me to debate this issue. And Ajami advises Bush on this policy. And I made the very simple point out in Dubai, and I said, look here, how can they promote democracy in the Middle East when they're doing everything humanly possible to build a police state here in America, and we American lawyers have done everything humanly possible to stop it, and right now we're losing this battle? These neocons could not care less about democracy. As I said, if you read Leo Strauss, I studied with Joseph Cropsey, his co-author and literary executor. They have complete and total contempt for democracy. They subscribe to Nietzsche and the Last Man. That's where Fukuyama's end of history and the Last Man. These people are Nietzschean. They are neo-Nazis. They could not care less about democracy. whether it's in the Middle East and especially here in the United States, where, you know, again, they're doing everything possible to build a police state here in the United States, which gets back to the, you know, this question of impeachment. We have to bring these people down and get a new administration in there, new leadership that is going to at least try to stanch the further development of a police state.
Francis Boyle, you are one of the heroes of our time. I want to thank you very much for being our guest. I want your listeners to know the two books you should look for, Biowarfare and Terrorism and Destroying World Order. Go to your local bookstores and ask them to get them for you and put them on their shelves, because these are manuals for what we need to fight the empire, to strike a blow against the empire. Thanks once again for being our guest on Takes on the World, and best of luck
again,
to you.
Again, thanks for having me on, Jeff, and again, I do appreciate and consider all the fine work you've done for peace, justice, and human rights, certainly for as long as I've known you, which goes back for a ways.
It goes back. Yes, it does. Well, thank you, Francis. Take care.
Bye, Jeff.
Bye-bye.